Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio.
I'm Danny Wisentowski, in for Elaine Cha. What we pay public officials is a matter of public record. It's why salaries so often show up in the news. And this week is no exception, with the Francis Howell School Board facing questions about why it paid $200,000 to a superintendent who left the job before his first day. Asking someone about their salary is usually a fairly direct and sensitive question. But the wages given to public officials are, in a very real way, the people's money. And tracking who gets paid and how much is one of the most basic tools that citizens and journalists use to understand their governments, to follow the money, and to see if those numbers add up. But in some cases, even right here in St. Louis, obtaining that information is getting harder to do. And to talk about how public salaries become public and what we can learn from them, I'm joined by Josh Renaud. Josh is a developer and data reporter with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and for nearly a decade, he's worked on that newspaper's massive annual database of public salaries, and that latest edition just went live a couple weeks ago. Josh, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So Josh, this database features hundreds of thousands of names and salaries. It's elected officials, and it's also teachers and administrators and judges. There are so many people, maybe we don't often think, who have these salaries that are by law public. But on a basic level, who is included here? What is the scope of who these salaries belong to?
Yeah, so there, altogether, we have about 300,000 people in the published database, and about 100,000 of those are teachers. And they're in public school districts and charter schools across the entire state of Missouri. And then we have about 200,000 people of all stripes, like you said. Some of these are just council members and small municipalities. You know, it might be bus drivers at Metro. It might be judges. It might be people working at the state of Missouri, state of Illinois, University of Missouri, University of Illinois. And then even some places that you might not think about, like the St. Louis Zoo or the Science Center, which received tax revenue through the Zoo Museum District.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to get into more of these details here. And this is data. This is a lot of discrete practical challenges that you have to figure out. But I think there's a big why here, because I think someone could look at this and say, this is very invasive. You're publishing a lot of personal information. I think people are familiar with this idea of doxing, of putting out people's personal information. And journalism has a very long ethical tradition of this idea of public officials and writing about things, about people who wield power. But this is a different kind of project, and it provides us with an incredible database and amount of information. So that big question, the why publish all of this, and what does it actually give you and your colleagues in terms of sussing out the truth, seeing where corruption is? What's the upside here?
Yeah, so we do hear over the years, I've gotten had a few interactions, especially in small municipalities where maybe there's a new clerk or somebody who's not familiar with this, and they're like, why are you asking for this? And there's a lot of reasons, but I think the biggest and the strongest is public accountability. Like, the public deserves to know how tax money is being spent and whether it's being misspent. And by virtue of asking, we are putting attention on these different government agencies, and we're letting them know that we're paying attention. And this is something enshrined in law. You know, government is like of the people, by the people, for the people. And these records are for the people. And that's why we have a Sunshine Law. And so any member of the public can ask for this stuff. But what we see in it, it allows us to see some things like whether there's inequities, for example, or whether people are spending too much on something. And so great examples this week that we've seen, there were two state audits that came out. And one of those was of the county prosecutor's office. And my colleague Kelsey Landis did some reporting last year about how there were a number of prosecutors in that office who were making full-time salaries, good pay, But they were also moonlighting for municipalities as judges or prosecutors or whatever. And in order to report that aspect of the story, she had to use pay records and needed pay records from these small municipalities. So it wouldn't have been enough to just have records from the county, but she needed those other records to kind of cross-reference them. And that's something that was touched on in this audit. And maybe even a bigger example might be the St. Louis Public Schools. So there was the audit that came out of the public schools and spending under the previous superintendent, Keisha Scarlett. And of course, my colleague, Blythe Bernhardt, has really owned that story and uncovered all sorts of things which that audit addressed, including how Scarlett had hired a number of people to like six-figure salaries. And it seems like that was kind of beyond the kind of the standards or the rules of what they were supposed to be doing. And you don't learn that stuff unless you have the records. And so it is really important to be able to get these records.
So I also wonder, you know, I've certainly heard of people who've used this pay database, who've searched, you know, their own jobs in ways or their colleagues. It sounds like this is also, though, a tool that the people in these governments are able to use. And maybe, you know, are they able to get this information otherwise? What have you talked to folks who've used this database perhaps inside these agencies?
Yes. Yeah. I have heard from people, particularly teachers, but also people who use it when they're trying to set salaries. So I've heard from city managers who are like, hey, I'm trying to figure out how much, you know, X position makes across St. Louis County. And there really isn't, because our government here is so fractured, it is hard to get a picture of how pay is, how much people earn across all these different municipalities, across all these fire districts and school districts and the different units of government. So, you know, they can use it to find out how their peers are being paid. They can use it to find out what people are making at other potential places they might work. And like I said before, it can also help them to see inequities. Are people maybe having to rack up way too much overtime, being overworked at a particular place? And so those are things that come through with these pay records. And when we stopped, there was a couple of years where we kind of pivoted on what kind of teacher data we put in the database. And we kind of stopped using the state data and switched to using data we obtained directly from local school districts. And there were sort of trade-offs with that. But we did hear from a lot of outstate teachers who said, hey, we use your database to figure out things like this. And they asked us to bring back the DESE data, which we ultimately did do.
This gets to something I think really specific about this region. I think we've talked about the way that governments are fractured. You know, that is the landscape in which we live. These governments don't get to talk to each other very often, certainly share their records. I'm curious, and this is something I will continue talking about, but you are in this rare position of actually unifying a great deal of information that these governments don't otherwise share. It sounds like you get a chance to kind of play as some connective tissue and actually do some of that work that these governments are not able to. Are you seeing perhaps that space where these governments really wish they could talk to each other, or where they're saying, you're doing something we don't get otherwise?
Yeah, maybe not that exactly, but I have had the experience of being sort of the outside institutional knowledge for some of these places. There is, you know, like in any industry, there's a lot of turnover. And particularly in smaller places where the pay might not be so great, you know, the city clerks might change a lot, or there might be a new city manager, or maybe the payroll system, they get new software. And or maybe an elected office, like we've got a new St. Louis sheriff, for example. And so I have in the past had the experience of people not exactly knowing how to get the data that I requested. And I'm in the position of being able to explain to them, you know, well, if you email this person and if you ask for this, they'll be able to give you this spreadsheet and then you can check it and pass it on to me. And it's because that institutional knowledge internally didn't get passed on, but I kind of have it and can help them with that.
And I think that's such an important point because when you are requesting this data, and I'm going to ask you sort of how you go about this. They are not just going to opening a folder on their computer saying all of the salary data formatted and searchable. They are not passing you perhaps their specific work documents. You are putting together something new or cobbling together pieces into something new. And so when you begin doing this, this is a long process. What's your first step as you're reaching out to these offices? What is that where does that process have to start for it to actually go well?
Yeah, so because there's about 140 different agencies that end up in the database, not counting school districts, which we get that data from a single source. So we have to make, 140-ish individual requests. And that is primarily done through email. And there's a few agencies that we kind of do a little bit earlier because we know that they need a little bit more lead time. But the bulk of them, the last few years, we try to send out around May. And so it's sort of, just a big blast of emails that we send out. And then we just start getting bombarded with the responses. And so it takes a few of us to kind of to be able to handle all of that interaction and that communication. And some people know exactly what we need. We've been doing this for years, and they send us what we need right away. Sometimes there's a little confusion. Maybe there's somebody new. Or like I said, maybe something has changed at their city or at their agency, and they're not sure what to give us. And so that back and forth is super important to make sure that they're giving us accurate data, and that they're also giving us what we asked for. And we can only find that out by having that back and forth. And most of the folks we deal with are like super professional and want to help, and they understand the importance of sharing this with the public. So usually those interactions go pretty well.
Sometimes, though, even at the end of the process, you actually don't get the data. And I understand there were a couple universities that did not provide data, I guess, for this year's salary database. We had a question from Brian in Columbia who actually asked us why Harris Stowe University isn't on the list. I think Southeastern Illinois University may also be there. I might be misremembering the name of that, though. What happens, though, when these organizations say, we actually can't get this to you, or we don't know how to give it to you in a useful way?
Right. So just to step back, so those particular universities are not in there because we didn't ask for them.
I see.
So with this project, there are trade-offs. Obviously, we have a limited amount of, manpower, and that has shrunk over the years. And so we do have to make choices about who are we requesting from. And so our priority is to get every municipality in St. Louis County, and then larger municipalities in the metro area, and then all of the key counties, the states, and then certain key agencies and universities. We have tried to gradually add some. So, for example, we were not getting like Southern Illinois University Edwardsville in the past, but the last 2 years we've included them. And so there are things that we add year by year. This year we added a couple of water and sewer districts in St. Charles County, and those are driven by people asking us for them. So we did get requests for the water and sewer data, and then on our end, making sure, is this going to add too much, or can we do this year after year if we decide to add this? So in those specific instances, that's kind of what's going on.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about public salaries. And when we come back, we'll learn why the city of St. Louis seems to be having trouble with transparency. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
Welcome back. I'm Danny Wisentowski, in for Elaine Cha. I'm here with data journalist Josh Renaud of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Each year, the paper publishes a vital database of the salaries of public officials in our region, that's both in Missouri and Illinois. And Josh Renaud has worked on that database for nearly a decade. So, Josh, after the latest edition just came out a couple weeks ago, you posted the results and links to Reddit, and you made this very interesting description. You called out the response time of the city of St. Louis. You called it glacial. Why is that?
Yeah, so for the last 3 years, the city of St. Louis has taken more than 100 days to fulfill the request. And particularly these last 2 years, it seemed like nothing was going to happen. And it was only after 100 days when I started reaching out directly to either people in the personnel department or to spokespeople in the mayor's office that the records were released. And but you know, like this year, for example, I ran the numbers just to see for comparison, and across the 140-ish agencies that we were talking about earlier, it was an average of about 14 days to get records from most of them. And when I made a little chart where I kind of plotted how much time it took for the different agencies, and the vast majority were able to do it, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks. St. Louis City was just kind of in a class by itself in terms of how long it took. And this is not like a surprising request. It's one we, like you said, we've been making for 10 years. And in fact, this year I did notify the mayor's office because after our experience last year, where it took about 140 days, I reached out directly to some of the people in the mayor's office that I'd spoken to the year before to say, hey, we made the request. Here's the number. You know, hopefully it goes better than last year. Obviously, that was the previous administration.
That is the rub here. You were in communication with a different mayor's office than
right.
the one that was in power when that, the work to actually get those records together happened. You reported some of these details, for the Post-Dispatch. Also, talk to us about that because, you know, like you said, you tried to set this up the right way, and then you kind of had a number of weeks of getting basically automated rejections of some kind.
Yeah, not rejections exactly, but so the Sunshine Law requires government bodies to give you the earliest estimated date. Like if there's a window where they are supposed to make the records available for inspection, and I believe it's 3 days in Missouri. But if it's going to take longer, then they're supposed to give you an estimate of the earliest date that you'll be able to see the records. And so they have a system where, like a piece of software where you make the request. And so in the old days, we would just send those requests to a person. In fact, many of the requests we make for this app, we send to people. But the city prefers that people use this portal so that they can better keep track of the requests. But what we find is that for a lot of the requests that we make, there's sort of this templated thing that happens where every week or every couple weeks, they send you a response where they kick that earliest estimated date just another week or 2 weeks down the road, and nothing has actually changed. And they have a little language in there about that the records custodian has notified us that they need more time to find the records. I'm skeptical that anything has actually changed. I think it's just that the records haven't come yet. And so they just keep kicking this can down the road seemingly forever until we start making noise about it.
And state law is, you know, says pretty clearly, you know, they're supposed to actually be working. They're not just trying to buy time. I understand the state law is on your side.
Yeah, it was obviously this is an opaque situation. I don't know what's going on their end. I don't know what efforts they're actually making because they don't explain them. They don't give us a real explanation. The city hasn't, at least, of why there's a delay. They only say that there is one. But they never explain the reason for the delay, which I believe they should be doing. But, you know, yeah, so there was a change of mayor. But that system of continuing to kick the fulfillment of this request down the road didn't change. It kept going even after the change of mayors.
So you ultimately had to kind of go beyond, I think, the normal process that most people have access to of this city Sunshine website. You went to a city spokesperson and you got these records, you know, the next day. What's going to happen next year? You know, do you have a sense? It sounds like there's not a clear sense of what is actually obstructing these requests, but you're going to have to do this again next year, and they're going to be doing this also. What are things looking like for this process? Is there any clearer hint of why it is this way?
So the mayor did, when I started reaching out about this, and when after the records were ultimately provided and we had all of our back and forth and got everything clarified, and I started working on the story about the public pay database and about St. Louis's long delay, the mayor actually did reach out directly and we talked briefly about records. And she reiterated that this is a priority for her. She said at her inauguration, this was one of her main priority areas, openness and public accountability. And she reiterated that. She said that she has reiterated that to her staff. But when I asked about, are there actually any policy changes? Is there going to be changes to the way you handle sunshine requests? She said that nothing like that has come forward yet, but that we should stay tuned for the future. So, you know, I can be cautiously optimistic that maybe something might change, but the proof will be in the pudding. And this is the show me state. So we'd like to see some of our current requests start getting handled faster.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be coming up on 4 years of 100 plus days waiting for St. Louis. If maybe they can get it below 100 days, it'll mean something.
Yeah, you know, something we didn't say earlier is just for comparison, St. Louis County, which has almost the same number of employees as the full-time employees as the city of St. Louis, took 8 days to get us the same type of record.
I did want to ask, you mentioned you had gotten records from sewer districts, very small government agencies. Are you finding, I guess, putting St. Louis City aside, that larger governments are more capable of getting these requests more quickly, or does it come down to individuals here?
You know, there is a lot of variety, but I would say that any entity that has a larger and more professional staff tends to handle these requests better, but that's not universally true. And sometimes there are obstacles, or maybe someone decides that they really don't want to release records, and there has to be a little bit of a back and forth and some fighting and pointing out of the law, you know, in order to get what we need. But I would say, generally speaking, yes, the larger, you know, universities, states, counties, larger municipalities do tend to do better.
You brought up, you know, that some of these governments and folks have maybe objected or said, why do you need this data? And in the past, we've actually encountered quasi-governmental agencies or governmental agencies that say, we're not actually subject to the open records laws. Our salaries aren't public. I'm thinking specifically of drug task forces that have tried to fight providing records because they say they are not actually government agencies. Are there areas that you found where this question of, you know, what is government, you know, what is a public salary, is there a space where that is not resolved or where you're finding that there?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think there are. You know, I think one that has been on my mind is the St. Louis Police Foundation, which is paying some of the city police chief's salary, and that I learned had paid an outside consultant to do a substantial amount of work for the city police force. And I think, you know, they maintain that they're not a quasi-public body, but I do wonder, you know, if an entity that exists primarily to, you know, give money and buy things for public bodies, if that would be a quasi-public body. So that's one example that's come up in recent years. But I'm sure there's, you know, loads of others.
Josh Renaud is a developer and data reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The newspaper recently published its latest annual edition of its database of the public salaries, both in Missouri and Illinois. You can search that database at stltoday.com/pay. Josh, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.